Welcome to the Gentleman Project Podcast. I'm Corey Moore.
And I'm Kirk Chugg. Today we have Chad Willerson with us on the podcast. He is the founder and president of Pacific Capital, and he is a fiduciary wealth advisory firm founded in 2011. And after 9 years of climbing the ranks as an investment advisor at Merrill Lynch, he started writing books and speaking. He just told me he does about 150 podcasts and interviews a year. He manages $450 million investment portfolio as a city treasurer in his own community. And so he's got the public and the private, the service elected official portion of his life that he shares with everybody. And he's written, is it three books now, Chad?
Fourth is on the way. Yes, sir. Three books.
That's awesome. So all of that professionally, but Chad is passionate about kids as well. And that's why we asked him to be on the podcast. He's passionate about teaching kids to be smart, not spoiled, which is the topic of one of his books. And so we want to delve into that and talk to him a little bit about what he does to teach kids, his own kids and other kids, about financial literacy. Welcome to the podcast, Chad. Glad to have
you. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. Sounds like an exciting set of content that you guys have, and I'm sure it's a great group of listeners out there.
It is. So tell us a little bit about your family and the family makeup. Like, how many kids do you have? That kind of thing.
Yeah. So my wife and I are married 22 years. We got married young, college students, both from California here. I grew up in Southern California. I'm the oldest of four kids. My wife is a middle child of six, and we landed on having five ourselves. So we've got five kids. Just dropped off our oldest at college. We're very excited. She's going to be playing Division I basketball in the Big 12 conference. We're a big sports family. So that's something that we're really excited about.
And that's cool.
Yeah. So five kids. Our youngest turns eight in July. And we've got three teenagers right now. So we're right in the midst of the storm.
We're all in similar family situations. It sounds like we've got either seniors or just graduated seniors and kids going off to college, all three of us. So it seems like we've had a few of those lately on the podcast, Corey, where we're in that launch phase.
Yes, we are in the launch phase. So Chad, talk to us a little bit about financial literacy for our kids and why did that become important to you?
Yeah. So to answer that question properly, I just got to give the context. You know, I've been in the wealth management industry for 22 years now, and I would often get questions about what should I do with my money and kids? What should I pay for? Should I pay for their full college? Should I buy them a car, their first house? How do I get them involved in investing, and when do I start? And I just felt like if I can't nail this, and I don't know this myself, then nobody does, because I'm the one who's the expert, the financial expert, and I'm getting all these questions, and I've got to make sure I have all the right answers for this topic. So as my kids started growing older, I wanted to think differently about money management. And so I started by having them open their own bank accounts at age 7 and 8. And I started trying to make them as independent thinking as possible. And so I never paid our kids an allowance. And like I said earlier, my oldest is almost 19, but our kids have never earned an allowance. And that's a little bit unique, I would think. Most people are used to just getting money because they survived another week of life as a kid. but I dove deep into this concept of teaching my kids to be financially savvy, to get investment experience at a young age, and to learn about the basics that the schools just don't teach anymore. Or never have taught. And so that's what got me writing my second book, which is called Smart Not Spoiled, which is the 7 money skills kids must master before leaving the nest. That book has practical tips, activities, and ideas for parents and kids to engage in, regardless of whether the kid's 4 years old or 24 years old. I think there's a lot of useful stuff in there. That got me into becoming a co-founder of what I believe might be the biggest thing on my future resume, which is the company called Gravy Stack, which is a bank and a game all in one for kids. We started it 28 months ago. It officially launches this month to the world. The app just got approved on the Apple Store. We've invested about $10 million in it, and we've got 50 employees, and we started a bank. There's a debit card for kids, but it's really the financial game where kids are going to learn and earn and have fun at the same time, rather than, hey, let's go to Chase Bank or Wells Fargo Bank and sign you up and get you a debit card. And then when you need to spend money, you know, I'll put money in your account, which teaches the kids nothing. But that's, I think, the most traditional approach that we're used to. So kind of a long-winded answer, Corey, but I'm passionate about teaching kids to be financially competent and ready to succeed, because I think we just throw them out there at age 18 and expect them to figure stuff out. And we're not doing anyone a favor by sending them out there unprepared.
Yeah. I spent a good portion of my early professional career in financial services because, putting myself through college, I answered phones at a credit union, and I saw the stupid mistakes that people made with their money. And, you know, bounce check after bounce check after bounce checked, and all of these fees, and there's like no financial literacy education whatsoever. So I actually went into financial services for about 8 years. And that was really eye-opening to me to see that most of the things that we just assume our kids are going to grasp, because they're going to see us having used our debit card or our credit card, you know, to pay for dinner or pay for gas, that somehow teaches them this financial literacy about, you know, when you just turn a certain age, then you get to use all of these things as well. It's been kind of interesting to see how we as a society have taken on really like this apathy towards teaching our kids about money. We did something similar with our kids when they turned 8. You know, we went and opened bank accounts for them, and they all have their own separate student savings accounts and things like that. But my oldest now, we started to help her build some credit. And she did, you know, like a share savings loan where she'd pledged some of her own money and paid it back with interest, and just trying to build some credit as she's, because I know how valuable that's been for me in my life to have a credit score. And right. There's a lot of kids that they get to be, you know, in their 20s and they don't have a credit score, and they go to finance their first car or qualify for a mortgage when they get married, and they've just got no credit score, no experience whatsoever. So what are some of the things that you teach in your book or with your new app, Cravy Stack, to get parents more involved with this process of teaching our kids about credit and the financial system that we live in?
So Smart Not Spoiled, the book, focuses on those 7 key principles. I'll just read the chapter titles real quickly. Invest early and often. Borrow wisely. So that one, we talk a lot about different types of debt, how you can borrow for what. You know, some people, there's Dave Ramsey that says you should have no debt. There's Grant Cardone out there who says you should leverage to the hilt for growth. And so we present both sides and just talk about what's productive debt, what's unproductive debt, and credit scores and things like that. Number 3 is know your cash flow. Number 4 is talking taxes. I think it's a disservice to never discuss what taxes are. The taxes are your number 1 expense in your budget. It's not your rent, not your mortgage, it's taxes. Number 5, we talk about learn to earn. I think teaching kids how to be valuable. Our company wrote a book called Value Creation Kid. My co-founder, Scott Donnell, co-founder in Cravy Stack, wrote that with Lee Benson, another investor of ours, talking about how to teach kids to be financially valuable out there and learn to earn money by doing things that they're good at and they have fun at. Number 6.
This is amazing because I just got this book in the mail.
Oh, you did?
Somebody That's sent awesome. Me, Randy Garn just sent me that.
Oh, book yeah. Randy's mail. A friend of mine. Yeah. Randy's a friend of mine. That's cool.
So he's the episode right before you.
Oh, that's
I just
funny.
Barely got that book in the mail from Randy. So that's oh, awesome. Cool.
Randy needs to be sending out my books. I'm going to text him after we're done. All right. Number 6, protect who and what you care about. And number 7, give generously. So we talk about charitable giving and just having an abundance mindset. Cravy. So the book I wrote basically became the blueprint for creating the technology that is Cravy Stack. Cravy Stack is going to be a deep, deep dive into financial and life skills that parents can set up their home economy talk about what's expected of their kids and what's extra pay of their kids, how they can earn more money above and beyond to do whatever they need to do to pay for their own expenses and build those financial skill sets. So the easy book, audio book, I would say Smart Not Spoiled and Value Creation Kit are two great books for parents and teenagers to grasp. Like my teenagers listened to the audio book and they liked it. It's consumable. It's not technical. It's very easy to read. But Gravy Stack, if your kids are ages 6 to 18, I believe that this company is going to be, it's going to be big. You know, the biggest competitor in the space is a mogul. It's Greenlight Financial. And they've done an amazing job of getting debit cards for kids and automating allowance. I think where they miss the boat is that kids are not excited to log in to Greenlight. Kids are not learning. They're just spending. You know, they're learning how to spend money and use their debit card. But we have a game that has missions and levels, and it's like a whole gaming team that has created fun, interactive ways for them to compete against themselves and each other. And while they're doing it, learn financial principles. So different topics and levels on real estate or on stock market investing or on borrowing money or on budget savings. There's just a subscription hunt where kids can go in and like actually cancel subscriptions that their family is not using, save a bunch of money. We just had a family report that they saved, their kids saved, and their 9-year-old saved their family over $500 in annual subscription wasted fees. And they got to keep, I don't remember what it was, but maybe 15 to 20% of that. So like that's motivating, and it teaches kids to be resourceful. And I'm really excited about what's happening at Gravy Stack. So
that's awesome.
I can't wait to get my hands on it. So how are we getting our hands? Can you just download it once it's available on the App Store?
So it's available as of, I don't even know what day it is. It's today, Tuesday. It's available as of yesterday on the App Store. So gravystack.com is the website, but Gravy Stack in the App Store is where you can download it. So
that's so exciting. Congratulations, by the way. When you've raised that much money, you have that many employees, that means you've been at it for a while.
Yeah,
we get to this point.
We put a lot into this, so I'm excited.
Good for you.
That's great. What are some of the things that you learned from people in your life as it relates to financial literacy? Like, who taught you about financial literacy in your life, and how did they do it?
I was very much self-taught, and I feel like it was mostly post-college when I started in the financial industry. My parents were, they did fine. And they were pretty frugal. My mom, definitely. I just remember her like balancing the checkbook, writing the checks and writing stuff down at the grocery store, having tons of coupons, talking about being charitable and giving. But my parents were not really investors and not entrepreneurs. And so that all that stuff I had to really learn on my own. So I think it was just really from reading and learning by doing and making mistakes and just asking lots of questions from anyone I thought was successful, until eventually I felt like I gained some sense of expertise that I could begin teaching others.
Sometimes we have to be self-taught, right?
And yeah.
Hopefully our kids have us as a resource, moving forward with some of these tools and the things they're technology natives. And so I think you're going about it the right way, kind of getting an app into their hands. That's the way they learn. It's where they spend a lot of their time. So
I'll say this one more thing, Kirk, on that is that we believe that banks need to change, that parents need a roadmap, and that kids learn by doing, and they learn by when they're having fun. And so those are kind of the three pillars of what we believe in at Gravy Stack. So like, banks are old and stodgy and traditional, and they're not really, I mean, like when I opened the Chase account for my kids, they gave me a packet of like 20 pages stapled in a folder with their business card. And I'm like, you want me to give this to like my 9-year-old? Like, this is going straight in the trash. There's nothing they're learning from this. There's no, so I don't feel like the kids are learning from the big institutions, whether it's schools or banks. And we're trying to bring something to where the kids are asking the parents, hey, I want to do more. I want to learn more. Get me on this Gravy Stack app. I'm playing games. Let's talk about this or that, because for them to progress in the game, they have to do real life stuff. So we're not trying to get them stuck on the screen. We're trying to get them doing stuff in the real world and being rewarded. So it's a different approach than the banks are taking.
Talk a little more about, I think it was your first chapter, Invest Early.
Yeah.
I think that's a big thing that most parents don't teach their kids. And if kids did that early, even in minor ways, it can make this huge difference in their life. It's just that they don't know. They don't learn that until they're in their 30s or 40s, right? And so talk a little bit about what that means and ways that kids can go about it.
I like to see kids make mistakes while investing and have heartbreak while investing small amounts instead of when they're 50 or 60 with big amounts. My own kids, we have them save and invest and donate and spend, like, you know, it's the three jar principle that everyone is familiar with. But I think having them do more than putting money in a savings account, have them go to Vanguard or Fidelity or Schwab or something and open an account and let them invest. Let them invest in something they're interested in. If they like Apple products or Google or Amazon or something like that, let them invest a little bit of money, get them experience. If you're an entrepreneur, you can get your kids on payroll and have them earn some money tax-free and have them put money in a Roth IRA and get experience investing. The sooner you start compounding money that you're putting away, the more time it will have to grow into something significant, like you said, Corey. So I believe teaching them to invest early and often is not just an opportunity, it's kind of our duty. Technology is different now. We couldn't do this when we were kids. So let's get them familiar with what the investment world is like. Teach them about different things. You know, I've got a significant real estate portfolio, and I've taken my kids and flown them to different places and said, we're going to walk through the properties and talk about the numbers. And sometimes they're bored, but there are times when they light up and I'm like, I'm going to show you how I bought this $3 million apartment complex, and I didn't put any of my own money into it. And I'm going to explain to you that I had to convince this bank of this and this bank of this and this seller of this and put the whole deal together. And here's how much money I'm making every month from it. And then they're like, oh, that's interesting. You know, so eventually the light bulb goes off. I think it's on us to really try to create real life experiences where our kids can invest and learn and get involved instead of making money such a taboo subject where we're just not talking about it. So the kids grow up not knowing or thinking maybe money is a scary topic. It's intimidating. Or when we talk about money, mom and dad fight. So I think we've got to change the way we approach it.
Chad, we talk about values a lot on the podcast. And I think it was chapter 4 or 5, you said, give generously.
Chapter 7, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chapter 7. Talk to us about the values that come with that. Like how do you go about teaching generosity and charity to kids when it relates to the values you have in your home and the money that you make?
I think creating a culture of generosity is something that motivates me to be successful. Teaching my kids that people are more important than money. A lot of the movies, even Disney movies and movie characters that are wealthy, they're always seen as the bad guy. And I'm very cognizant and aware that our kids are blessed beyond their needs. And so I probably overdo it in this area because I'm concerned that they might grow up having spoiled attitudes or being entitled. You know, when we go on vacation, we always try to set aside some time to do service wherever we are. And so we were in the Caribbean and my wife found like an orphanage that we were going to do a few hours of service there and hang with the kids. So it was the second day of the vacation and we paid a lot of money for this taxi ride that turned out to be way farther than we thought. And the taxi driver was so confused because we're leaving this nice resort on vacation to go to this orphanage. And we spent hours there, had lunch with the kids, and our kids made friends there, and it was cool. And we went home. And that was day two of our spring break. On the last day of the trip, we'd done all the excursions we wanted to do already. We had spent time at the resort. And my wife and I asked the kids, like, what do you want to do for the last day? And they said, I want to go back to the orphanage. And that's when I was like, okay, this is landing the way we're trying to make it land. They didn't want to go more water slides or go on more fun excursions. They were like, we want to go hang with those kids that we made friendships with. So I think if you're intentional about it and you give your kids experiences to serve, it's not about just writing a check and donating and telling your kids what you're donating to. It's like giving them experiences where they get their hands dirty, or when they're like doing actual service, and you just make that part of who you are. So our kids know that we're givers and they're looking for opportunities to be givers. And I think that's really important.
Love that story. Thanks for sharing that with us. That's inspiring. I love it. I love that your kids wanted to go back to the orphanage. I think most kids would, actually, once they've experienced both and they're actually feeling this sense of giving, of getting to know the kids, of feeling, you know, something bigger than themselves.
Yeah.
They're going to walk towards that, right? It's human nature.
Agreed.
That's super cool. So at one moment you were having your clients ask you, hey, should I buy them a house? Should I pay for their college? Should I pay for a car? Should I not? And there's probably no exact perfect black and white answer. Maybe you have one, but what are your advice as those kind of come along, right? So you've got an allowance, and then you've got that usually comes into play at some point that you may or may not believe in as a parent. And then you've got typically some kind of toy. Maybe it's a, you know, scooter, a bike, whatever, then it's going to become a car, and then it's going to become college, and it's going to become down payment on a house. And where does a parent draw the line or not draw a line? And maybe you have some thoughts on how to go about that.
Great question. My feeling is, well, I'll tell a quick story. This weekend, my son had a volleyball tournament in downtown LA at the convention center. And so we were staying there, and it was Saturday night. All the volleyball games were done. So we decided to go bowling, and we went out to eat, and we went bowling down there. And I got in trouble with my wife because I refused to put up the bumper lanes for my youngest two kids. And I said, I was like, it's against my nature. Like, when are you going to learn to try to bowl straight? Like, when do we decide that the bumper lanes go off? I'd rather just teach you to be a good bowler than to like let you just bounce it off the sides of the lanes. And it was kind of a contentious moment for the family. But I thought about that, and I was like, that's kind of like how I look at the financial assistance thing, is like, at what point do I want to take the pacifier out and teach you to be financially successful? And my answer is right away. So we don't pay for our kids to have birthday presents for their friends. Our kids have to earn their money to do that. I overpay my kids for the extra work they do. I pay them more than they would typically earn, but it's because I want them to be rewarded for their efforts, and I want them to associate personal effort with rewards and success. So, you know, one of my daughters wanted to go on this service trip to Africa. That's 3 weeks. And I was like, that's great. It's $5,500. So how the heck are you going to earn that in 4 months? And she was like, well, I don't know. That's a lot of money. And I was like, I know. And if you're making $14 an hour, like, you're not going to get there. So I said, if you come up with a way to earn money faster, I'll help support you in creating whatever that is. And she's a basketball player. So she was like, well, what if I start offering trainings and charge per kid or per hour, like $20 to $30, and I could train 3 or 4 kids at a time. And she's like, can you help me make a flyer for that? Like a digital flyer. I said, yeah, I'll do that. And she ended up making like $160 an hour for a few hours every Saturday morning and every holiday between December and March. And she earned the $5,500, you know. And how much easier would it have been for me just to give her the money or pay it on my credit card. It would have been real easy, but she would have missed out on that learning experience. And so my middle son, he loves animals. We don't have any animals. We got five kids, so we don't have pets, but he loves to walk dogs. So like he created a dog walking business. So he went door to door to the neighbors, people who have pets. He's like, hey, if you're busy, I'll walk your dog for $20 for half an hour. I'll get to know him. I'll feed him and whatever. And so that's how he makes his own money. Our oldest son has a curb painting business. He's kind of over that now. He's 16. So he's starting his own drop shipping business, e-commerce that he learned about on YouTube on his own. Our fourth child is 9. She does the trash cans for the elderly neighbors in the neighborhood. She only gets paid like $1 a trash can, but I make her do the invoices and go around with her little invoice book and get paid her, I don't know, $10 a month from each family. So I want to support them earning their own money from the beginning. I don't want to pay for all their stuff. And then they're 21 and it's like, all right, you get nothing from me now. Good luck. Like, because then I'm just pushing them off the cliff. So I know not everyone will agree with that. And not everyone maybe feels okay with that, but that's the way I've approached it. We had a client here recently, you know, one, the husband was like, I'm not paying for any college for my kids. No one paid for me. I worked and earned it myself. And the wife was just like, are you crazy? Like my parents paid for all 4 years plus a master's degree. We're absolutely paying for it. And we have way more money than my parents did. And he's like, I'm not paying a dime. So here we were sitting in this meeting and they're like totally disagreeing right in front of us. And in the end, I think the compromise they came to was like, he said, okay, we'll pay for their freshman year fully and we'll give them some support their sophomore year. And then by then they've got to figure it out and pay for the last 2 years. And she was okay with that. Hmm. So there's not a one size fits all. And maybe some kids are totally different situations than the other kids. But my philosophy is, how soon do you want to take the training wheels off the bike? I don't want my adult kids riding around on training wheels. It's not good for them and it makes me look real stupid.
You deal with like 8 and 9 figure entrepreneurs, right?
Yep. Yes.
So they always have these kids. By that point, they probably have adult children. So
sometimes, yeah, not always.
Sometimes, but if they do, what's the dynamic there and what coaching and counseling do you give them if they have maybe neglected to do all the things that we hear you doing at home with your kids from the early age? And they do have spoiled and entitled adult children that expect, a piece of mom and dad's pie.
Yeah, it's tough.
How do you coach that?
They'll often have us meet with or talk with their adult children. Some of them were raised with those values. And so they're like really into investing and they're super humble. And others I can tell are just spoiled brats, like hoping their parents will someday pass away and they can get everything. So it's tough. Luckily, a lot of our clients are under 50 years old and they've got 10 to 200 million invested with us. And so they have the chance to still create that foundation for their kids. But it's interesting. Some clients tell us they really want to produce a legacy for their next generations, like multi-generational legacy. And I have some clients that say literally like, I want my kids to get nothing. I don't want to ruin them. And it's a little harsh on my opinion. Cause I'm like, I have one client whose net worth is probably 350 million. And he's got lots of kids and he's like, I don't want them to get a penny. And I'm like, that's kind of extreme. Like if they don't get anything, you might be doing more harm than if they got something. But I had one client say, if I was about to die and all I had left was a quarter, I would swallow the quarter. And I was like, this guy was old school, but everyone's different. You know, everyone's different. I just want to equip my kids to be successful adults and not be dependent on me or anyone else. And so as much as we can promote those principles, we really strive to, regardless of how old the client's kids are.
Do you have any clients that do an if then with?
I've seen that. Yeah. Where like they have, well, I have a client who's got like a trust that has, it's almost like an entrepreneurial trust. And so if one of their adult children or grandchildren starts a business, Then he's got parameters of how much he'll co-invest in the business. They value education. So it's like, if they get a degree or this degree, we're going to set aside this much money to give to them. You know, so yes, some of them do have strings attached, and there's pros and cons to that. I'm not against it. I mean, it's their money, but if you're overly controlling from the grave, it's kind of messy. But I can also see how it's better than just dumping millions of dollars on an unprepared kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had some interesting friends that have done some if then stuff. That's kind of fun. Mostly it's, hey, I'll invest if I like the business plan. You know, right. I'm never giving you a dime, but you know, this is why they're alive, obviously, but you send me a business plan and I'll be one of the investors, you know, that's
right.
I'll be your first investor. I kind of like that.
That is cool.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
Chad, you talked a little bit about, you know, this with one client that says that they want to leave a legacy. And I think that's a common wish from a lot of people, is that they want to leave something that outlasts them. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, leave money aside, what does that mean to you? What do you hope your legacy is to your children?
I hope the legacy I leave is the same that my grandparents left for me, which is valuing relationships and people above all else. You know, my grandparents were really successful in business and finance. They did very well. And none of that financial stuff will ever get to me. But what I do remember, like I remember I was 6 years old and I was at my grandparents. They had a really cool beach house in Balboa, Newport Beach area. And she had just got it furnished, and it was beautiful white couches, and it's just really cool beach house. And I don't remember what the drink was, but I spilled a red fruit punch literally all over the couch. And I was not supposed to be drinking in that family room. I was a young kid. And I distinctly remember like going in the corner and just crying because I was busted. I was going to get in trouble with all the aunts and uncles and my parents and my grandparents. And like my grandma came over, put her hand on my back, and seemed like it didn't matter at all. Like she was so kind about it. And she was like, it's okay. It's not a big deal. She's like, you know, Chad, people are more important than things. That's what she said. People are more important than things. I was like, wow. I told that story 100 times. I'll never forget it because I was 6 or 7 years old and I was terrified. So I think that's the legacy I'd love to pass on to my kids. And I feel like so far they embody that, and I hope they will continue to.
So go through the chapters again for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ordering this book as soon as I hang up, unless
Randy
sent it to me.
Come on, Randy. Invest early and often. Borrow wisely. Know your cash flow. Talking taxes. Learn to earn. Protect who and what you care about. And give generously.
Okay. Is the protect one similar to what we were just discussing?
Protect is really talking. It's teaching kids all about different types of insurances and what they're for. Car insurance, home insurance, auto insurance, life insurance, just everything of how to, so they don't wake up and they're like, you know, they're 18 years old and they have no idea about anything in regards to insurance, which I feel like most kids have no clue.
I was going to say my mom and dad did a pretty good job, but yeah, that is not one of the things they covered.
Yeah.
You know, like everyone that's listening should buy this book because it's like this, you know, check the box, get out of jail free card. If you can walk this through this book with your kids a couple times, and at least you would have given them something. Right.
I mean, I incentivize my kids to read books like this one. So if when I find a good book that I think is useful for kids, I'll pay them and say, you read this, you give me a little verbal presentation, or you do a video presentation on what you learned, or you type it up. Like, I'm going to pay you for that. So there's a little extra incentive behind it.
That's, you and I are common there. That's one of the ways my kids can earn money to pay for stuff, is I say, if you read a book that I prescribe,
yes,
and you do a book report on it and go over it with me, then I'll give you X amount of dollars, you know, which
by the way, that's a key feature in the Gravy Stack app is you can create brain. We call them brain gigs. So like, hey, here's a PragerU video, answer a few questions or write a few things. And here's how much you get paid once you complete this task. Like you can send articles, books, videos for your kids and just set it up there, set a price, and any of your kids can choose to do it whenever they want. So it's kind of cool.
I love that. And I think that this idea about purposely teaching our kids about finance and money and having them have that literacy as they go into adulthood is so important, because if you look at some of the familial strife that happens oftentimes in marriages and families that tear them apart, it's about money. And so, yeah, we're talking about money, but we're also talking about relationships and keeping relationships.
It's the number one cause of divorce above infidelity.
Wow. Yeah. So this topic, I think, is very important for our listeners and for all of us to realize it's not something that you can neglect and hope your kids get by osmosis. So, Chad, thank you for joining us. And now we all know that we've got an app that we need to download, a book we need to read, and then they can follow you too on LinkedIn, and you've got a very active LinkedIn page, kind of stay up to date with him. And then his website is pacificcapital.com if you'd like to get in touch with Chad as well. So thank you, Chad.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks for giving the world all these tools. I was thinking when you were saying that I should walk through that book with my wife, with my kids, because we'll all be thinking together, right? Be thinking the same way and be having some of those conversations that might mess up a marriage. They're going to come out early.
Right.
Or at least now versus later. You know?
Yes.
So it's actually kind of a cool idea to do it as a family.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, once you're done listening to Corey and Kirk's podcast, hop over and listen to one of my episodes on the Smart Money Parenting Show.
Nice. I'm going to have to listen to that too.
They're short, bite-sized episodes. We don't typically have guests. It's usually just me and the other Gravy Stack co-founder talking about very specific principles for parents, especially focused on financial literacy stuff. So 15 to 20 minute episodes. But I think if the listeners liked what I had to share today, that they would probably enjoy some of those episodes.
Sweet. Yeah. Hop over there and give that a listen to. Will you say it one more time for our listeners?
Sure. The Smart Money Parenting Show.
Okay. All right, everybody. You've got your marching orders.
Lots of homework, but useful.
Yeah. And good stuff. Well, Chad, at the end of every episode of the Gentleman Project podcast, we talk to our guest about what they think it means to be a gentleman. Would you give us your definition of what you think that means?
To be a gentleman. I think it means to have integrity of character at all times and all places, no matter who's there, who's not there. To treat people with respect and to leave everything better than you found it. I think too often there are success gurus that are very different in public and in private, and their social media is not really who they are. I think a gentleman is the same wherever they are. They've got integrity and character, and they are the real deal.
That was a great answer, by the way, Chad, especially somewhat off the cuff. Very good job. You've obviously
totally thought about
that before.
Yeah,
I know I could tell it was off the cuff, but that was perfect. Thanks for joining us. Really, really appreciate it. Great knowledge, great things for our listeners to go do after the podcast to improve their lives. So thanks for being with us, Chad. That meant a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. I'm Kirk Chug.
And I'm Corey Moore. Go get some financial literacy and download that app, everyone. Talk to you soon.